here on the air is the name of the show for at least a short period of time. And we're going to have Reverend Kiger come on with us here in a couple minutes. And we're going to talk about the world and the desperate situation we seem to be in right now. I'm Glenn Coble, and I'm moderating the On the Air show for right now till we find a better name for it. And I will be doing the Swap Shop show after this. And we will talk about baseball. But right now, we're going to try to get Reverend Kiger on the air, and we will talk about some of the things. But Dan and I have been good friends for a long time, and he is one of my favorite of all ministers that I can remember. Hang on just a second. Dan?
Yes.
Okay, we're on the air. Unfortunately, my music is playing over the top. I have to figure out how to turn this off, and then we'll get you on here. We are on live on the air. Hang on one second. All right, now I think...
That music actually might have been more uplifting than anything I had to say anyway, so... How are you, Glenn?
I'm good, Dan. I hope you don't mind me referring to you as Dan as opposed to Reverend Kiger, but...
No. I've been called so many things in my life that Dan is refreshing, actually. That's great.
Well, you have been my friend for, I don't know, since probably...
Oh, right.
20 years?
30
years? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's been longer than that. Yeah. I mentioned before I got you on the air earlier in the show, I mentioned that your sons and daughter and my sons and daughter played sports together, and all of them were pretty darn good athletes.
I had a lot of fun telling my kids that I was going to be talking to Amy and Chris's dad on the radio this morning. So yeah.
Well, you may not like it after we get going, but no.
That's all right.
Let me talk to you. You know, the world situation right now is just disaster.
Yeah. And nothing unlike anything you and I have ever seen.
Absolutely.
As we are.
Yeah. Now, as a minister. And Dan, by the way, Reverend Kiger is a Methodist minister, used to be the chaplain at the hospital, and I believe you were the number one minister at Epworth for a while.
I was senior minister at Epworth for 7 years, and I was at the hospital for 14 years.
And now, happily retired?
Happily.
You're doing all the laundry and stuff, because I don't think Judy's retired yet, is she?
She just has.
Has she?
Retired now, too. So, yeah, we're
fantastic.
We're just in time for all this pandemic.
Yeah, so of course.
We're just kind of hanging out together.
Well, you and I live, I'm going to touch on this just briefly. You and I live fairly close together, and in a straight line from the direction the wind was coming last night, do you have any trees down in your yard?
We actually don't.
Lucky.
We're blessed in that regard. I mean, you know, little pieces of...
Yeah.
Little pieces of evergreens and stuff, but nothing large. I saw pictures of some significant damage. What about over on Euler?
Well, we have two huge trees down on Euler, and my wife, I was getting ready to come into the 6th anniversary show last night here at the radio station, and my wife screamed out, "There's a tree on our electric!" And I went out back and about a 14-15 inch in diameter limb had fallen on our electrical wire and was hanging there. It still is, by the way.
So we were
a little nervous, but got through the night, and apparently Ohio Ed's going to come out and take care of that for us.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Anyway.
Well, let me ask.
Go ahead.
Sure. I was just going to say, maybe this will make your job a little easier in two ways.
Okay.
First, I'm old enough that I'm outspoken. I can be more outspoken now. And the other is, if religious people don't have something to say now, then we really ought to just keep our mouths shut. That's my thought anyway. So now that I've sort of looked at as a little prelude, t- take me where you want to take me.
I love that answer. Well, you probably have figured out that I'm an agnostic at this point.
Yeah.
But being a Methodist minister's son, I like to think of myself as a Christian agnostic, if there uh-huh. is such a thing. And one of the things I would ask of you, and one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on, and we're not talking about President Trump. I would like to ask you, what recommendations would you give to any president, not just Trump or let's say Biden wins or whatever? What type of recommendations would you give to the leader of this country to heal this world right now, or heal the country right now? I know that's a broad question, but
no, it's a very and I'm going to resort to it to a cliche, but it really is true. I think we as the people need to know that those who are in charge of us care about us. They don't even have to feel our pain, to use the old Clinton phrase, but they at least need to care about us.
Yeah.
as human beings. I think that's what I would say. That would be a good start, that we are a family of people together, and I think healing should be approached in that way. We're not against each other, and this really does get into I think teachings of a lot of the great spiritual traditions. Really, I would think a leader would call us beyond caring about only ourselves. Selfishness is nowhere, or I'm number one, or I'm going to look out for me, or I've got a right to do whatever I want to do. Those things are not quotes from the Bible. I don't know where they're quotes from, but they're certainly not in the Bible.
That's true.
And I don't think they're in the holy books of any of the great religions of the world.
Were you listening to the show before you came on?
No, I wasn't actually. No, I've been outside trimming some of my weeds. That's what I was doing this morning.
Well, the reason why I asked that is I went over the 18 chief religions in the world, and I absolutely agree with you. I can't imagine any of the religions in the world don't emphasize caring about each other. Okay, what do you think has caused this divide, though, that we seem to have more in the United States than anywhere else?
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to reach into probably the most charitable part of myself to say this. I think at base, as mad as some of this stuff makes me, and as mad as some of these arguments make me, I think that at its base, people are scared. Mm-hmm. People are afraid. That's usually finally what is motivating self-centered behavior in people, very strident behavior in people. You know, unless they're just sort of pathologically bad, chemically wired wrong or something. I think fear is at the base of this. I realize I'm reaching back to another politician who, what do you say, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Yeah, that's
and I
right.
think
Roosevelt.
probably at its base, there would be all kinds of things that people are afraid of.
Yep.
And somehow they've gotten into their heads that the only way to move out of this fear is to stick up for themselves. Mm-hmm. To stick it to whoever they think has been sticking it to them, kind of. Obviously, that's a formula for disaster, it seems to me, and we are living that out. We really are.
It seems to be that we have a lot of people that are saying, he's getting something I'm not getting, that's not fair.
Right.
And that would lead to the fear, I'm getting cheated or something.
Right.
How do you get beyond that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think as our society has become economically more and more out of whack. That's not that's not very eloquently put, but I think we have a much greater divide between the haves and the have-nots than we used to, really. And I think that becomes the breeding ground of resentment. When the have-nots are afraid they're not going to have enough, and then they look around them and they see some guy who has taken a company down the tubes getting a $25 million termination bonus, or something like that, you know, I think fairness really does come into play, and they become afraid they don't even have enough money to pay their own mortgage, and yet they see other people who are no different than they are, really. That they may think they've just gotten some breaks that they never got, that are prospering. I think so. By the short answer, I'm a preacher, so I'm rambling here, and I don't get to do this very often anymore. The short answer is, I think we narrow the gap between the haves and the have-nots. I don't think it's possible or desirable for everyone to be totally equal economically. I just don't think that's. I think that's just an irrelevant kind of thing to wish for. But I think we can narrow the gap so that people aren't scared of how they're going to feed their kids, or even educate their kids, or pay their mortgages, or that kind of stuff. So economic fear, I guess, would be the base, and we can tighten some of those disparities.
It seems to me, and I don't mean to, I'm not going to point a finger at any specific group, but it seems to me that religion is actually stepping in the way of us getting back together with each other. There are some religions that are, you know, that are so antagonistic towards those that don't believe the way they do. Do you find that as a problem?
Absolutely. I mean, yes. I don't know that I see in the teachings of, certainly in Judeo-Christian teachings, then those would be the ones I'd be most familiar with, just simply because that's the world in which I was reared. I just don't see a lot of emphasis emphasis or teaching that would say it's good to say I've got it and you don't. I don't know where that came from. You know, that we somehow feel a need to separate the sheep from the goats. To use that analogy that's in the Bible, I think that story says that was the good Lord's business, was to separate the sheep from the goats, and certainly not ours, because as we often find out if we live long enough, the people that we thought were goats are really sheep, and vice versa.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, we're going to have to take a break here in about 2 minutes, and I hope you can come back after the break.
I can.
Okay.
I can.
And I will give you a heads up, and I'll cut you off before we have to go. But do you think there's a way that our religions today, and this is a long answer, it's going to come, so I'm going to have to cut you off in midstream here, but how can we find a way to calm this anger that we, religiously, is there a way that we can do that?
To remind ourselves that we all came of the same creative process. Whatever you believe about who was in charge of that creative process, we all came of the same creative process, which makes us all family, it seems to me. And again, I think most of the great religions of the world have a decided emphasis on the poor and the misunderstood and the one down in society. I think for us to recapture some of that and not be so worried about our own entitlements and what we've got coming to us and our own way of life. I think religions can teach us that we are fundamentally brothers and sisters.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off there. That's a perfect place.
Gosh, radio is my favorite place for news.
Well, Ted, I take that as high praise.
Well, it's true, without a doubt. Where else can you find a mayor, governor, treasurer, and the golden voice all on the same show? Variety is the spice of life.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions, don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Well, you almost timed that perfectly, Reverend Geiger.
Wow.
That was very good. Coming back, one of the things, and I appreciate your last answer, but this is another one that I talk about a lot on my show, A Progressive Life, that I think if you're Christian or you're not, if you would live by the parables in the New Testament exclusively, you'd be a pretty good person. The Good Samaritan jumps right up into my mind that would take care of lots of problems.
Uh-huh.
Do you?
Uh-huh.
What
yeah,
other?
You're helping, you know, someone who's got it is helping someone who doesn't have it. Or someone who has the ability to help is rendering that help to someone who needs help. Yeah, you're right. That's a pretty simple object lesson. I mean, my 3-year-old grandson can understand that concept, that you help someone who needs help. That's right. That's pretty simple.
Yeah.
I don't know why we complicate stuff so much sometimes.
The golden rule is very simple, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people don't really follow the parable deeply, but that parable also says that the Good Samaritan took that injured man to another to a motel or a hotel and paid the guy and made sure he got nursed back to health. We don't, if we can just get to the point where we'd help him, I'd like to see that, but
right.
We don't go that second step yet. We got a lot.
But I see what you mean. To follow, we got to keep, yes, we've got to keep healing the wound and not just simply putting the Band-Aid on.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Another question I've had on my show, people say, but the Bible says this and the Bible says that. I have a struggle with, my wife does as well, like, why would God kill all the children in Noah's Ark? He killed, drown everybody that wasn't on the Ark. How does that work? And is the 2,000 years since much of this was written down, or actually, I guess it's more like 1,900 years, but how do you translate when you have to imply that there are 2,000 years of difference in our mental, in our scientific, in our thought processes?
Right. Well, Chris, that's a very good question. I mean, the world in which, oh, and of course, the Noah's Ark story, that was written, you know, 8,000 years ago,
yeah,
or something like
right.
that. I mean, that's an old story. And, of course, it's a story that many, many civilizations have.
Mm-hmm.
Many civilizations have a story of a great flood. I think the early religious emphasis that we all heard about was about a God of righteousness, and by that I mean, you know, a God who cared a lot about who was doing good things and who was doing bad things,
mm-hmm.
and stories were remembered that that seemed to, what I want to say, perpetuate that, or, you know, reinforce that idea. I think as religions evolved, I guess that's the word, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't use, some people would not even want the word religion and evolved used in the same sentence, I suppose, but as religions developed, let's put it that way, there became a greater and greater emphasis upon a God of mercy, and not so much of a triumphant and vengeful king as a God who would leave 99 and go get one, who was concerned about the lost and the least, and so we see that development certainly through history. I think you know, the ultimate question you're asking, of course, is how does God ever let anything bad happen to children? You know, I don't know. I don't understand that. I don't think God lets stuff happen to children. I mean, I think he lets us do things, and I think he lets natural processes work. I mean, you know, we probably all, if we go back even a generation or two, know that we have had little cousins and even maybe little brothers and sisters who died of childhood diseases that we can now cure, that we can now deal with. And so do I think that somehow God likes the children better now because they can get a vaccination against something that kids two generations ago couldn't get? Of course not. God loves us all. I just think it's one of those questions that we simply cannot answer in the simple look it up in the back of the textbook way that we would like to. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like I tell my audiences quite often, we have to use our brains. I mean, you can't be totally thoughtless and be a good person. You have to think about things, and you have to.
There are many who have written, and that the human brain is, in a sense, the greatest testament that we have to the creative powers of a loving creator. You know, that the human brain is an incredible thing. It really is. So, of course, I'm just saying I agree with you. to neglect the gift of our brains and our mentality is to neglect probably the greatest gift God ever gave us.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you, even though I tend to be agnostic. I can't imagine that there is anything better as a proof that there might be something above me.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you think religion's going to answer these questions, or are we going to continue? Like I was saying earlier before you came on, 30%, between 25 and 30% of the United States population is moving away from any deity. They're either agnostic or atheistic. Do you think that's a continuing trend, or do you think that happens to be just because of where we are in our society today?
I think a long view of history would tell us that civilizations move in and out of periods of greater religious devotion, I guess you might want to put it that way, than others. However it needs to happen, more and more of us need to get it in our heads that we are not the center of the universe, that finally there is something or someone or something greater than us that is holding all this together. And I think as long as we focus simply on what's going to be best for us, I think we're losing sight of any greater greater good that can come. That's a rambling way of saying that. Do I fear that religion will somehow sort of become extinct? No, I don't fear that. I just think we are in a period of really deep questioning right now, and I understand that. And I understand young people's frustration would be that we have made some grandiose pronouncements about life and then have not seemed to follow through on them as religious people. And so they're nailing us for our hypocrisy to some extent. But do I think that we are on a one-way street headed toward less and less spirituality in this world? My simple answer is no. I don't think that. I think we're in a phase, maybe, but I don't think that history will bear out that that's what's going to happen to us.
I've told a lot of my people, friends, and people that listen to my show that I like having religion, even though I am what I am. I like having it because the people that I know, that I deal with, that have a sense of religion, are good, empathetic, caring people. And I think that's the way we need to go. But how do we explain people who claim to be Christian killing other people of other colors, other sure. creeds and stuff like that, by putting their knee on their neck for 9 minutes? I just, how can you call yourself a Christian if you condone what our president has supposedly lied 20,000 times now? How do we condone our differences in the beliefs we have with our population right now? If
well,
we can.
I think I think that politically and relationally correct thing perhaps to say is that we all float our own boat. We all, we all come at things differently. But no, I don't know that I think that as much. I mean, and I, of course we do. We all have different life experiences. I certainly will understand that. But sometimes, even in matters of religion, and certainly in matters of human behavior, there are wrong answers and there are right answers,
mm-hmm.
simply for the time. We have to simply decide which side we're on, it seems to me. For me to simply sit back and say, I'm not going to judge whatever outrageous things you say, because you have a right to feel that way, and you say that to me, that's a very fine way for Glenn and Dan to kind of interact together, and that means we'll have very polite conversations if and when we ever eat out together again or something like that. But on the other hand, I think you have a pretty clear sense of what you want to be doing with your life and ought to be doing with your life and what you're not doing. I do too. So I don't think we can abandon any standards at all. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, we're just about at the end of this segment, and I think as you and I get older, we get smarter.
Oh,
I hope.
I hope that's true. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
Anyway,
so much to give me that you gave. You give an old preacher a chance to just pontificate like you have.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought you needed to get out of the house.
That's great.
Verbally.
I appreciate that.
All
I
right.
really do.
Well,
my best.
Will you come back on with me, Dan, occasionally?
I'd be honored to.
And talk about these things?
I would be honored to.
All
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes. Have a good day, guys.
Okay, thanks a lot for coming on, Reverend Dan Kiger. I appreciate it very much. I've loved you all my life, and I will continue.
Thank you, Glenn. The feeling's mutual. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Reverend Kiger, what a great guy. I truly do love that man, and he always thinks through things, and I love that. My I hope my audience got that from how he thinks about things. He never says, I'm right, you're wrong. He always thinks about things. Well, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
From NBC News, this is Today with Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira.
Wow, that was a special morning doing the opening for the Today Show in 2011.
Yes, but you know what? There was a downside.
What was that?
Having to share a dressing room with Willard Scott. Smucker jars everywhere.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, I think you now know why Reverend Kiger is my favorite minister, living minister. My favorite minister, obviously, would be my father. But Dan has a very similar background. I think he went to the theology school of theology down in Delaware. I believe that's where he went. But he grew up with middle-of-the-road type religious experience, much like my father. I would say both of them are wouldn't be considered aggressively progressive, moderately progressive in their thoughts of caring for other people. I'm always embarrassed to tell Dan that I'm an agnostic because he was my last minister before I decided I was agnostic. And I hope that Dan, if he happened to get back on and is listening to this, I hope that Dan understands that he didn't turn me off of religion. That had been a long, long, long journey that I had been on, and I got to it all on my very own, and I'm not done with it yet. I'm continuing to try to think, and I hope you will do that as well. Continue to think where you stand in this world. Continue to think what you like and what you don't like, trying to mold it towards goodness for our humanity, being kind to your fellow man. We are all, I like to say this, we're all of one race. We're all of the human race. And that is so much different than saying he's an African American, or he's a Native American, or he's an Asian, or he's a Hispanic. Who cares? We are all human beings. Now, I understand, and a lot of people, when we were doing our Black Lives Matter, I'm not sure what to call it. We got together on the last two Saturdays down at the court at the City Hall. It wasn't really a protest. It was just a statement of fact. That's what it was. When we did that, we did have people screaming at us when we were saying Black Lives Matter. We did have a few people that would scream back at us, All Lives Matter. And I want people to understand that I think people that believe that Black Lives Matter know that all lives matter. But Black Lives Matter because for 400 years, they haven't mattered. And we're saying, wake up. Black lives also matter. But black lives do matter. And one of the causes that just drives me crazy is the cause of the Native Americans, whose lives we have absolutely crushed and ruined. Aboriginal tribes down in Australia, same problem. Hey, I've got a caller. Let's get to the caller.
You're on the air. How can we help you?
Oh, geez, Glenn. Religion.
Yes. We've got all the answers right here.
A former professor of mine said he would like to have seen or like to see a play with God on trial.
That's an interesting thought.
For all of the pain and suffering. And particularly when you look at the Roman Catholic Church and the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And,
or the Crusades.
Etc. Many things that were done in the name of God, in the name of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, religion is all man-made.
It is. Yes.
Man made this up to control fellow man.
You hit it on the head.
And that's why we have in the United States the separation of church and state.
We could be brothers in with the same mother. I agree with you. Absolutely.
The thing is that that's why the religions, it's called faith. You have faith
mm-hmm.
in what you believe in that. But, you know, the thing that really bothers me lately is Black Lives Matter.
Okay. Talk to me about it.
I'm an African-American.
Uh-huh.
You're an African-American.
Yes, you're absolutely right. If we go back to the Garden of Eden, that's exactly where we're from.
We lost our pigmentation. Our tribe left Africa exploring. That's why we don't have the pigmentation. And it just, you know, it's like the scab, the wound is healed, and they pick the scab back off. This is about the third generation of all of this uproar and protesting. And that's demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it all is. It's all demonstrations. And I would say if you gave a history test to some of these people who are, they're not righteous, they're self-righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a problem in that because you could be very myopic. And study the history. It's just a shame because everything is repeating. Here it is. Every 20 years. And
we don't seem to learn very much.
Well, the sad fact is, I'd like to know how many of those people across the United States were moaning and groaning about this, and make no mistake about it. It's outrageous what has happened. It should never happen. But how many of those people get out and vote? How many of them are active in their own local government? If they were more active and got out and voted instead of waiting for tragedy to happen and then have self-righteous indignation, gee whiz.
Well, I think this coming November, we will see a lot more get out and vote because of self-interest, if nothing else. But I think you will see a lot more people get out and vote. But I think I have a lot of friends, well, not a lot of friends, but I have some friends who are African-American who have given up. They kind of say, oh, geez, I've been doing this for a lot of years. Now, my first protest...
I'm only going to interject one thing.
Sure.
Winston Churchill... never give up.
Yeah, but it sounds to me, I'm assuming that you and I are privileged white men. And
I wouldn't say privileged.
No, I would. But
no.
I know for a fact that I've been let go by a cop.
My parents both worked
uh-huh.
to see that I got an education.
Uh-huh.
I'm not privileged at all.
Yeah. I think socially, we all have to admit that a black man has a better chance of getting by in this world than a white man does than a black man, and I think that is a little bit of privilege. But you know, that's why we have the
Morgan
right to
Freeman,
discuss.
Morgan Freeman answered a question just like that.
Uh-huh.
Morgan Freeman, I believe, is from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
That wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
And a guy who interviewed him said, you know, essentially the same question. And Morgan Freeman said, I'm here.
Yeah, you well...
know? The problem with the country is there's too much ignorance, and the government doesn't give a damn about educating...
A lot of ignorance.
...the electorate.
You're absolutely right.
They don't care because they give them the mushroom treatment. Feed them manure and keep them in the dark. But the fact of the matter is to the public, oh, my vote doesn't count.
Yeah. We have a lot of crybabies, you know, right now.
And the fact of the matter is, okay, you're not voting, that's protest vote. No, it isn't. The protest vote is to go get registered to vote, go to the polls, cast your ballot, even if you don't select anything on there. And remember, when you do something like that, you are honoring all of the children, women, and men who made it possible for you to moan and groan and bitch.
Well,
so get up off your lazy butts. Go out there. Honor those people who made it possible for you to vote.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think you will find that we have a much better, because there is so much self-interest right now, I think we'll have a lot better turnout in November. That is if we are allowed to vote. And I do believe that there's still some question about
there's
that.
There's going to be a revolution if we're not allowed to vote.
I understand that. And I have said that before.
It would be so amazing if people in Marion would fill City Hall when they have City Council. I can remember when I participated, the place was packed full of people.
Mm-hmm.
If people would give 1 hour a week to the community, to local government, and participate, just 1 hour, 1 hour a week, it would be amazing at how much change could be accomplished.
Well, I think if you watch the lines in Georgia last week, those people didn't give up. They stayed in line for 3-4 hours to cast their vote, and that's kind of uplifting. I appreciate those tough people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got too many cemeteries and national cemeteries with people begging for those who draw breath to go vote, that their efforts were not in vain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sorry?
Marion, wake up.
Okay. I absolutely agree that we need to put our monies where our money where our mouth is, and no, put our mouth where our money is, and start talking about these things and doing something about it rather than just buying things. So,
being reactive. Be active.
Yep, yep.
Don't be reactive.
I got you. I'll go along with you. I'm not sure I go along with you on the Black Lives Matter thing, but that's all right. That's why we have a democracy, and let's hope we continue to have a democracy.
It's one really important thing. Too many people self-righteously go back to slavery in the United States. Hey, Native Americans captured and enslaved other tribes. All the tribes of Africa captured, enslaved, conquered, enslaved. It is not that big of a deal.
Well,
because everyone at one point in time was a slave. And the fact of the matter is, it sucks.
Slavery, I think you and I will agree, is wrong, no matter who's doing it.
And it's funny, because England outlawed slavery before the United States did.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yep, it did.
Well, I'm going to have to let you go, because I'm down to the last 30 seconds.
Yep.
But thank you very much for your call. Have a good day. All right. Great. I love having people talk and think about what we're doing. Now, he and I may disagree on a few things. We agree on an awful lot of things. But think about things.
Know why you stand where you stand. If you don't know why you stand where you stand, then you need to start studying why you stand there. All right, well, we're going to go away here, and I'll be back, and we'll do some stuff on Swap Shop. Thanks for listening to On the Air with Glenn Cole.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio. For Emmy Award-winning actress and voice of Ursula from The Little